This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
In the studio, our next guest we have is Darren Sylvester. Welcome to the show, Darren.
You're
here to talk about your exhibition at the NGV.
Yes.
Which is on at the moment? Or
no, no about Friday.
Open, well, there you go.
28th. Region notes.
I'm terrible. I should have read. I can see it in big print. I should have just read that out properly. Now, welcome to the show, Darren.
Pleasure.
Now, we'd like to start off by just having a bit of a chat about how you got started in the arts.
And he said, oh, that will be over in 30 seconds. I'm sure it won't be.
I'm sure it wouldn't be. Now, how
I
did
can try.
You, well, we'd rather you don't really. You know, our listeners might be more interested in that. Let's not take up that challenge.
Okay.
So, Darren, how did you get started in the arts and where did the love come from?
Look, I grew up in Byron Bay, so my parents were, born in Sydney, and we travelled around a bit. My dad worked for the Commonwealth Bank as like a teller and sort of worked his way up. So I wouldn't say a banker, he just worked in the bank. And we ended up in Byron Bay, so we stayed there from when I was
as a manager? Was he a bank manager?
Bank manager. In those days you moved around a lot, which I guess is... That's like 30-odd years ago.
Yeah, which now they're closing. All those.
In those days
ones.
It was... The Commonwealth Bank, so they were everywhere. They were, you know, the government owned them.
Yep.
And so it was a government job, I suppose. And I went to Byron Bay High School, and which was great. And it was quite... And Byron Bay, it was a lot of art, basically.
Well, it was a hippie. It was the real hippies back then, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so you have, like, there's two maths classes and there's one science class and six art classes. So everybody did art.
Brilliant.
And then we got moved just at the end of high school to Wagga Wagga, New South Wales, which was quite a culture shock for me because it's the central army town of Australia. And so I went to university there, Charles Sturt University, Riverina, for 3 years and did design and photography. And I went into photography because I'd never done it before. I was a painter, and I think I wanted to do it because if you chose photography, your parents had to buy you a 35mm camera as a default. So I just chose that. And I did quite well at that. I think I found my calling then. I kind of changed and went into photography and making work, and... I'd never been to Melbourne before, but I always knew.
Well, hold on, just go back there.
Yeah.
Photography, did you feel that it was an art form, photography?
Yes.
Because, you know, like there's been this debate where now photography is very much seen as an art form.
Mm.
But back, say, you know, like 10 or more years ago, I was struggling, you know, like a lot of photographers would, you know, really... They didn't call themselves artists, did they?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I guess because we're at university and we were in art and we called ourselves that because we were all like 19, 20 and we were taught as it was an art practice. I guess it would have been like in a wider sense. That's definitely a discussion.
Yeah. And what sort of interest did you have then in your photography? Was it landscapes that you were taking?
It was still similar to what I'm doing now. I would say very different, but it was still constructed. I wasn't going around. I was never a documentary photographer.
Yeah.
It was a way for me to come up with an idea in a studio or basically at home and set up a bedroom or something like that. And the camera was always on a tripod and the camera was always just used. As I would describe it, as just the recording device. I've never really done anything blurry or atmospheric or anything like that. It's just simply I create something. You could almost say it's either performative or it's set building, and you just can't take all that into the gallery. And painting it took too long, so photography became default.
And what I love about photography is you have to have that eye. Yeah, like it's an eye that you have to have, and light plays such an important part, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yes, I mean, I kind of go. It looks, you know, it's similar to painting from that sort of original thing of like composition and so forth. It becomes very much from that, and that's the way I set things up over a long period of time, sketching, moving things around the studio. And then, like you say, lighting is like a really big thing of my practice because there's no flash lighting either. It's all constant lighting.
Really? Okay.
Meaning, and I realise that I've used the same sort of theatre Parco lights and a few banks of lights for now 12, 15 years, the same set, which is like 12 of them, different sizes.
Right.
And they're all on dimmers and they're all up and down. And that's kind of what I do. There's just lots of lights and you can kind of control it that way. So you pretty much whatever I see is what I get in each shot. Looking at pictures there, so it looks like, you know, it could be an operating theatre, but it's not. It's just a wall where I bought tiles and then stuck it on with blue tack and things like that.
Yeah.
Like it looks very glamorous, but everything's a B-grade construction. But I like that.
Yeah. So you said that you decided to move to Melbourne?
Yeah, I'd never been. I knew it was like the art city. So
how long ago was this?
That was when I was like 21, so that is exactly 22 years ago, 23 years ago. And, then, you know, you struggled because I didn't know anyone and I lived in St Kilda, actually behind the Prince of Wales, and somehow got a really bad flat by myself and I was on the dole for about 2 years and I just went to galleries. And I've said it before, but just no, I had no idea of the art world in Melbourne. Because I bought this thing called the Art Almanac that I'd heard about and then just started going down and got to A for Anna Schwartz and called them and said, can I get a show? But didn't get past the receptionist, wondering what the hell's going on. It took me 2 years to realise there was hierarchies and things like that. I mean, if you're going to art school at VCA where I teach now, you know all about that. But 20 years ago, I was naive. But I eventually got a small show, the Centre for Contemporary Photography, and I pretty much just had a show every year for the last 20-odd years. Then Gertrude Contemporary, then Span, then Arc One. Then I got represented by William Moira. Then got into Primavera in Sydney. Left Willie, went to a Sydney gallery and just kept having a show every year.
Mm.
And so when did you take up the teaching? You said you're teaching at VCA now. So.
Yeah, that was I've been at VCA for 7 years. Teaching was about 15. So the first seven, after I was on the dole and I couldn't take it anymore, I did market research, as you do, and I did that for like 5 years, which I hated, which everyone hates. But I mean, it is a motivator, because I was having shows and going home and doing market research and kind of going, well, if you don't make it, then this is what you are going to be doing, Cadbury chocolate surveys all day Sunday.
But how hard is it to actually make money? You're like,
very hard. Impossible. Impossible.
And, you know, there's always that struggle, isn't it?
Always. I'm sure there is some people. There must be some. I hope there are some artists in Melbourne or Australia that make money, but I'm not one of them. I'm not one of them.
Out of your art? Yeah.
Out of my art? No. It all goes back into art, 100%. If a show will cost X amount of dollars, which is generally a lot, I hope to sell everything, but you might sell one thing or two things, and that money usually pays off the debt that you did to make that show and it goes forward. So I always think it's like two steps forward, one step back. It kind of grows and builds, and most of success is hanging around. So that's
here. Describe your art to us. Would you call it pop?
Yeah, I call it pop. Yes, I feel like the show coming up is quite pop. And I'm really interested in things that interest me and I don't care what they are. And my kind of what is my sort of culture is, to me, is pop culture, is television and growing up on that thing, pop music and so forth. And you sort of mix that with a combination of my own anxiety and insecurity about death and dying. And those two really are opposing forces, meaning that pop culture is quick. A pop song lasts for a week, people get, you chuck it in the bin, you move on.
That is crap. A pop song, if it's a good pop song.
If it's a good pop song, it'll stay for it. The charts will change. The charts will change. So that, I just thought, if there was something I was attracted to that was from, that had fallen to a pop culture abyss of disappearing, I would then kind of drag it back and rebuild it.
Yep.
And I would say, I often call it a ready-made. It's something that exists, but I've reconstructed it. And I've brought it back. And it's normally to say, you're not going anywhere yet. You're staying here in the present with me.
Yeah. Talking about pop music, there's a bit of a pop legend that might have a couple of your photographs.
Yes.
Who's that?
Mr. Elton.
Mr. Elton, Elton John. And he's not Mr. He's Sir Elton John. How did that come about?
He was here on a tour, I think 10 years ago. No, maybe even longer. And I was with William Morin Galleries, and I think what happened was he asked for an art advisor, and he's a massive photography collector. Mm. And by coincidence, my exhibition was on.
Which one? What was it?
It was in 2006 or something like that. I can't remember what the works were. I mean, I do remember what the works he bought were, but I can't remember what the show was called or something.
Yep.
And anyway, I just know that the gallery called me up and were bowled over because I said Elton just walked in the door with his two minders, and he walked around and he just chose two, and he bought them in cash on the spot.
Wow.
And what was great was I actually had a show on at the Art Gallery of New South Wales at the same time, and a week later I got another phone call that he knew he loved the work. He went back and bought a couple more off the Art Gallery of New South Wales too.
Fantastic.
And it changed my life actually, yes, to a degree, because he paid in cash, and I said, kind of broke. I think I walked away with, my prices were very cheap, so I think I walked away with about $5,000, but I was able to buy a whole new computer system and things like that, yeah, and set myself up a bit and pay off debts. I remember that he walked around and he had a 5,000 per diem a day, which probably is not much for Elton, but he had $5,000 in cash.
Yep.
So I don't know how it works on his upcoming tour, but I know that he just has a daily amount of money. So he would buy a lot of stuff
and music. He would buy, he actually has somebody on his payroll that goes out and buys all new releases, right, yeah, mm-hmm, and then sends 50 or 100 copies if he likes it to all his friends saying you've got to listen to this album,
right?
You know, he's a huge supporter of the arts,
absolutely,
isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah, those blue, yeah, fantastic,
awesome. So here you are, you're teaching. Mm. Teaching photography, and now you've got this exhibition at the NGV. Mm. What does that mean to you? You know, like, well, you just said that Elton went to see your exhibition at the New South Wales Gallery. Mm. What does it mean to you at this stage in your career to be exhibiting at the NGV?
Well, it's my biggest show easily. Could be my biggest show ever. Who knows what the future will bring, but it's a massive show, taken a few years to put together. And
when did it all start? You know, like
3-odd years ago.
Did you approach them, or
no? They approached me.
Right.
To be honest, I think this is my theory is that Tony Elwood, the director, was the director at Queensland,
he
GOMA.
Was, yep.
And about 10-odd years ago, they asked me to spitball some ideas for a new show, which they're doing, called Optimism. And I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity. So I think I just went out of my comfort zone. The work I made for that was a big, so talk about pop music, I made a big recreation of the band The Carpenters' Los Angeles Yard. And it took a number of months. And I also made a solo record, which I'd never done before. And I gave it to him as a sculpture, saying, you're going to play this side every day. Anyway, I do remember Tony Luke being really impressed with I was overreaching or something like that. I was like really stretching myself. Anyway, 2013, when he came here, he had the show Melbourne Now.
Yep.
And he must have clocked me that he had the curators come around to meet me and get, do the same thing, pitch an idea. I can make work with small budgets, but the idea I pitched them was this kind of paintings that I'd made earlier of makeup colours, but let's convert them into light and turn it into a dance floor, and we'll get a company involved like Yves Saint Laurent and see if they give me all their eyeshadows. I'll copy the colours and we'll make it into a massive compact. Anyway, they loved the idea. It was all great and it was a huge success in 2013. 2 years after that, they got in touch with me again going, that was such a great work and we know that you can do it. Do you think in like 2 years' time we could pull a big everything together? And so that's what we've been starting to do. The book is 300 plus pages with a record in it, and we started doing that over 2 years ago. So it's a big, it's a very long project.
Yeah. And how exciting is it for you? You said that's probably the biggest thing that so far
it
and
is,
might
yeah.
be in your, you know, like career. How important is it for you personally?
Well, I mean, it's recognition for a start, and it's good to see that everything will sort of is coming together, meaning it's rare to have so much of my work in the one room at the one time. And the monograph, the book that comes with it, is actually incredibly important in terms of talking about sort of the crassness of even just like making money or so forth. But most of the money is made with galleries is in art fairs and travelling overseas, which we do. And something like this with the NGV's name and a monograph whilst the show is on in the next year or in the future instead of just saying he's a great artist, trust us, American dealer, you can sort of say this person actually is like got a great reputation in Australia, and that hopefully will then continue things on.
But they're like the NGV, they're publishing, their book publishing is a huge arm for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, the book fair that's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, the 15th. My book is the book that they are launching at there. So the book will be available on Friday, but NGV will be launching my book during the book fair. It's their book of the half, this half of the year or something like that.
Look at you. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
And you know, like the what... Is there a theme per se to the exhibition, or is it
it's just everything? Yeah,
you've thrown everything at
everything is there. It's a little bit like a Dover Street Market superstore. I describe it as. There's stuff going on everywhere, and it's noisy, and the videos are all playing. The dance floor is kind of in the back, just banging away. There's massive video works.
So how big is the space that you've got?
It is two big rooms on the top floor of at the Fed Square.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have filled four probably and spread things out, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are themes because there are, you know, there's a lot of like loss of love. There's just specific music themes, like pop music. There's a lot of death themes going on. They're different, but there's like six or seven. But it's more interesting, I think, to see over the history things getting repeated subconsciously, meaning there's like hamburger couches, for instance, that from 2 years ago, and then suddenly a work from 1999 when I did go on site to shoot one show off site. I did an operating theatre bed. I asked a hospital if I could take a picture of their bed. And so you have that next to a picture of that, and then another picture shot in New York in a psychiatry office of another bed. So like for some, I didn't realize that I photographed like four beds, but now we put those together.
Yeah.
So then that's what, and then they just sort of, they join in that way.
What does your father think now, the fact that he invested that money in that camera that you obviously forced him to buy?
I think he has no idea what I do.
So they're not coming down for the launch?
They live in Melbourne now. They all followed
me
down.
Oh, they live in Melbourne, right.
I know, they're not coming to the launch because they're just kind of like, oh, we'll just go see it sometime. Like, they're not in.
They're not that, yeah, like, and you don't want them there on the, because, yeah. Like,
no,
yeah,
I think it's too stressful to have your parents there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Because I'll just wander around going like, what is this?
What's he done? What does this mean?
Yeah, what is
it? We waste all that money on him.
Yeah, I think they find it surprising that I survive.
And what does it mean to you as a teacher, knowing that this exhibition is opening? Yeah, obviously your students know.
Yes, well they'll know. Yeah, I think a lot of them already know, and I'm sure they'll all know when school starts back. Literally Monday week. So the show opens Friday and then Monday school starts again.
Yeah.
So I think I'm giving the first lunchtime forum, which happens every Thursday at VCA. So they asked me to do that. So everyone will know by Thursday, the week after, the
right.
kids. I know, I hope they really like it. I think it's like a great, also positive, I imagine. I mean, I'm much older than the kids, but and I'm sure they can, if I was in their shoes, I'd probably... go, I can do much better than that. I can do, and that's fine. That's great. I did the same thing when I went to university. Yep. I don't mind that at all. But yeah, I think it's worthwhile that we have an opportunity in Melbourne that you could have a survey show in Melbourne now, which we discussed beforehand 10 years ago, for a living artist was almost impossible.
Yep.
And now there's like three or four every year for the last 3 or 4 years, probably been like 10 to 12, and they're ongoing now. So that didn't happen before. This is really fantastic.
I take my hat off to you. You know, like what you've achieved is amazing, and I can't wait to see this exhibition. What's it called?
Carve a Future, Devour Everything, Become Something.
Oh, it's a short title.
Yeah, it's a combination of desperate and aspirational.
Okay.
That seems to cover everything.
It covers everything.
So, Darren Sylvester, if you miss the name, just think of his name when you go to the NGV. Opens on Friday, the 28th, and runs till the 30th of June.
Yeah, it's like 4 months. It's free. There's a whole bunch of things that we've made, a whole bunch of books. There's like they've gone gangbusters. There's socks, t-shirts, jackets,
oh, really?
Records. Just like 20 things, like a shop they're making or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And they've all that. Do you feel the pressure?
Yes, a little bit. Just because I'm going in there tomorrow to keep helping install, and there's so much more to do, but they seem so chill about it, like, oh, it'll all be fine. And I go, like, in my world, we should be going fast with this. But anyway, they always say,
hey, they know what they're doing.
I'm just wandering around being nervous.
Yeah. And, well, of course you would be. Of course you would. This is your baby, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's your baby. Yeah. Darren, thanks so much for coming in. Can't wait to see the exhibition.
Thank you.
And the books and the T-shirts and the
and everything. The skateboards and the hats and, yeah, everything. Go crazy.
You're here on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.